Hey, it's Hannah.
It's Amy.
And you are listening to A Cuckoo in the Nest.
Today is Monday, December 10th, and we are covering our wintertime warriors, also known as the black-capped chickadees.
Stay tuned.
I can't believe we are almost halfway through December.
I know. Where's the year gone?
Yeah. Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about one of our wintertime residents today.
Yeah.
This is the season.
Right. A wintertime bioindicator.
Yes. A bioindicator. Exactly. It's a really common species you'll oftentimes see in both the city and the suburbs, even in rural counterparts of Chicagoland.
Yeah.
The black-capped chickadee. As Hannah mentioned, it's really important to kind of get to know these species because they serve as a bioindicator for our local environment. Like more and more species as we're coming across, they are sensitive to temperature changes.
Mm-hmm.
And they are considered highly adaptable, especially to urban environments. But at the same time, they can indicate when those environments are losing key habitat to sustain even the most flexible of species. There are species that indicates things like the effects of climate change and also just healthy habitat, not just for them, but for many other species.
Right. I know that they've been moving further north.
Yes.
Correct?
So there is a study there's what's called a hybrid zone between black-capped chickadees and a similar species known as the Carolina chickadee. So there is a region across the U.S. that they share the same zone in, and they intermingle a bit, if you will. This region has been moving steadily north over the last several years, actually at the rate of like 0.7 miles per year. And they did a study between 2004 and 2014.
So a 10-year window.
Yeah. So this study is already 4 years old. It's, who knows where it's at today. It's likely still moving north.
North.
We don't know if it's increasing, you know, the distance in which it's moving or what's happening, as far as I can find.
Right. I think it's important to note that even though it doesn't seem like a lot, 0.7 miles per year, that's a lot.
That's a lot to move in
a short amount of time.
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking at a 10-year window span. Like you said, yeah. We're 4 years out. It's probably continuing to move further north. And this is supposed to be a very common and adaptable songbird.
Oh, yeah. That indicates a huge change. Just that 0.7 miles per year.
That is consistently north.
Mm-hmm.
That says a lot about where we're at.
Yes, exactly. And it's more, this study kind of talks a little bit more about the Carolina chickadees, but it's important to note because it's a hybrid zone that they share with black-capped. So the Carolina chickadees are considered to be leading the charge on the movement.
Okay.
But the black-capped chickadees are moving just as well.
Right.
So something a little concerning, something we need to remain aware of.
And continue monitoring.
Yes, of course. So I guess, as always, we should probably describe what this animal looks like so no one's like, I have no idea what that looks like.
So according to Cornell Lab of Ornithology, it's a small songbird that has a short neck and a large head. So it has a rather distinctive and spherical body shape. It has a long, narrow tail and a short bill that's a little bit thicker than a warbler's, but it's also thinner than a finch.
Mm-hmm.
A finch is your seed eater, so it's got to have like that thick bill to be able to crunch through those keys. Yeah. So their name comes from the black cap markings that are on their head, and they also have cute little white cheeks and a black little bib mm-hmm. on their chin and neck. They're pretty distinctive. So when you go and look at a photo of them, you'll be like, oh, I've seen that bird.
That makes sense.
So they have dark gray wings and a tail, and their belly and underside can have more of a buff to a rusty brown color.
Mm-hmm.
They weigh like half an ounce.
They're little.
Yeah, teeny tiny.
Yeah.
And they've got a wingspan of about 6 to 8 inches. They're generally not sexually dimorphic, but mm-hmm. that male will be a little bit larger than the female.
Yeah, probably slightly, if anything.
Yeah.
And like we said, these guys can be seen year-round here. They're considered non-migratory. So the same, you know, group of black chat.
Black chat.
We're going to do this a lot, so Sorry in advance, guys. Black-capped chickadees that you see in your area this time of year are likely the same ones you're seeing in the warmer months.
Yep.
Their range is here in the northern U.S. all the way up into Canada. And when it comes to habitat, they're considered to be really flexible with what they can live with. They can pretty much be found anywhere that has trees or woody shrubs. That can include forests, woodlots, even your residential neighborhood and park. They also can be found in like those weedy fields and cattail marshes, more of the wetland environments.
Yeah.
As long as it's got a lot of dense vegetation, they do pretty well in it.
Where do they nest at? Like what, you know, they're pretty versatile with where they live, but do they prefer a certain nesting habitat?
Yes. So they are cavity nesters.
Okay.
They'll either take advantage of an open space or they'll actually excavate their own cavity space. And I can talk about that a little bit more when we do reproduction.
Okay.
Or go over reproduction. But oftentimes you'll see them nesting in birch or alder trees, which are, again, really nice tree options that can be found in our wooded areas here throughout Chicagoland.
Yeah.
And oftentimes they're found in groups. They're pretty social. They do have like a weird hierarchy. It's complicated, but they've got a pecking order within this group. And they also are known for their really complex vocalizations. So they have they have their own language when it comes to talking to one another. And research has shown 13 different types of vocalizations in their species. So this is usually a way to communicate, hey, I claim this space. Hey, I want you to have some babies with me. Or, hey, there's something scary going on nearby and you need to be aware.
Okay.
Pretty much. That's a lot of their conversations. and it's not that this language is kind of developed as like an adaptation to living in dense vegetation because they can't see each other clearly and they might not even be able to stay near each other often. So they need to come up with more complex languages in order to communicate across distances or through this thick vegetation.
Yeah.
So.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. When it comes to those notes, the songs, I should say, the males are most known for their two-note Phoebe call. So it's like a little whistling. It's like a kind of like that.
Yeah,
that's a chickadee.
That was a good imitation.
Oh, thank you. this is what they use to attract breeding females. And now that I think about it, I've heard this a lot in the months when they're breeding. So it kind of lines up with what I've observed and what I know. Learn when we research. So they also use it to claim territory. And it's said that females make the same sound, but they tend to do much more faint versions of it.
It's like a hollaback to her male.
Yeah. Just not as loud. And for some reason, they make this sound when they're feeding young. So maybe just a way to stay in touch with their mate.
To let the young know that, like, hey, this is what mom's call is if you get lost in that bush.
Yes, exactly. They also, another key sound that they make is the chickadee-dee sound, which is what led to their namesake. I cannot whistle that. So I will play a clip of that sound at the end of our episode.
We'll end the episode with it.
Yes. That's what led to them being called chickadees, of course. And this one... apparently it varies in length. It's kind of neat. They can add more D's in there. So it'd be like chickadee, dee, 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 dee. And that kind of signifies that there's predators in the area or there's something that the other chickadees need to be aware of.
So it's an important indicator within their own species of what's going on in the external environment. Yes.
It's a version of kin selection. So when they look out for others in their group in order to protect their species, to protect their kind, if you will.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that sound could definitely make them vulnerable to predators, but it might save others in their flocks, so it's worth it.
Absolutely. We have
a few different species that do the same type of activity. Squirrels do this with their yelling. they'll yell in order to alert others.
Grunts. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. There was a study conducted back in 2005 about the chickadee-dee sound, and they determined that the number of D's seems to increase when a more threatening predator is in the area. So it depends on how intense that predator is, I guess.
Okay. So like a small American kestrel versus like a larger cat or fox.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. So when chickadees aren't being eaten,
They're eating.
They're eating.
Eat or be eaten.
Exactly. Maybe we should kind of talk about what they eat because it varies a lot throughout the year.
So during the warmer weather months, they're really going to take advantage of the protein that those insects can provide, along with spiders too.
Yes.
They'll supplement their diet with residential bird feeders and any natural seed or berry sources that they can find around in their habitats. During those winter months, they're really going to rely more on seeds and berries. I know we talked about the winter berries a few episodes ago when, you know, we were mentioning some friendly wildlife ways that you could put out your high protein suet feeders, your high calorie.
Yes.
And they also eat, you know, just any plant matter really that's kind of left in the wintertime. Like Amy mentioned, they're here year round, so they've got to be adaptable in finding food sources and shelter.
Yeah, that's true. What else? Oh,
so they typically breed, I would say, when our other songbirds breed, what, like April, June?
It's the same
window.
Yes. So just like most of our songbirds, they do breed during the warmer months. That's April through June for this particular species. And they raise one brood per season. So just one group of little babies. I mentioned earlier that they're cavity nesters, and it's obviously easier to find a small cavity that's abandoned, but if need be, they will make their own. They're able to shell out their own space. I wouldn't have guessed that based on
their size. They're very small.
Yeah, and their beaks don't necessarily tell me that they could do this.
Right. It's not like a woodpecker.
Right. And apparently, you know, both the male and the female will do it together. And
okay.
It's a team effort, which is awesome. But once they have that space caged out, the female kind of takes over, and she builds a nest with inside the cavity. And it's cup-shaped. It might have some moss, a couple feathers, soft materials to help, you know, cushion those babies and keep them nice and warm. So, and then according to Cornell Lab of Ornithology, they claim that a clutch can have anywhere from 1 to 13 eggs.
What?
Yes.
That tiny little bird can lay 13 eggs?
I guess.
I mean, I know it's not like all at one time, but they tend to do this in like 1 to 2 day increments. That's a lot of eggs for that tiny little bird.
I don't want to doubt Cornell. I feel like they know their stuff.
Yeah.
But I thought that was crazy. Other sources say 6 to 8.
That's still, I feel like we typically see like 2 to 5 max.
I know. It's crazy. And they're only like, like half an inch long and wide. So they're like just little balls.
Little nuggets.
Just so sweet. And they've got kind of like a cream color to them. Some sources say they might have reddish brown spots on them.
Okay.
So might be a helpful way to identify them. Moms only incubate these guys for 12 to 13 days. And like most songbirds, those babies are in the nest for around 2 weeks. And then the next 2 weeks they're fledglings. So they're learning how to fly. They're out of the nest though, or leaving the nest. So
It's quick.
Pretty typical. Yeah, it's quick, but it's common, like most songbirds in the area. And the female, she tends to stay with the babies early on.
Okay.
Pretty much around the clock, and the male will bring food to everyone. But later in the development, once those babies are a little bit more independent, the parents will both leave the nest and come back with food or supplementally feed them on the ground or wherever they're
while they're fledging.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, gosh, we're just talking about, like, how well they do in this area, how well they do as a species, and it's true. However, it's still our responsibility to conserve and protect them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, they are North American species that are protected by the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. They tend to have stable populations, so they're of least concern.
Mm-hmm.
The eastern populations did see a slight increase between 1966 and 2015, according to the North American Bird Breeding Survey.
Ah.
That's kind of neat to see that, like, they've increased in population and despite just being stable over the years. Like, that's a good chunk of time for a population to be increasing.
It says they do really well with urbanization. In the presence of people. They're just one of those species.
Okay.
So it's possible that, you know, development has benefited them. It's kind of hurt them in a few ways, but overall they've done really well with coexisting with us.
That's good. So, and it's also important to note that they have succeeded with us coming into the area, because if they start declining in population, that's when we know that there's probably something more going on that we need to look into.
Right, exactly. Their global population is estimated at 41 million.
Wow.
So a lot of chickadees out there. Yeah. And like I said, I mentioned, you know, they've been benefited for the most part by people, or they've done well with it. But sometimes when we take away too much habitat, that can kind of cause issues. So taking away natural cavity options has been problematic. So
okay,
if you have like dead trees, or you're clearing out too many wooded lots and taking away even healthy tree options, that can make it difficult for chickadees to sustain their population in an area.
Okay.
They don't have nesting options. So one way you can help with that is, of course, as always, advocate for preserving open space in your community. You can also consider putting nest boxes in your yard.
Yeah, since they are cavity nesters.
Yep. Although it does say, from what I've read, if you want to attract chickadees, you should have like a pretty forested yard, or like have those nest boxes back within a good amount of vegetation.
Okay.
So they shouldn't just be put on a tree that's out in the open. They're not likely to go towards that. And this is a species that would love wood chips or sawdust at the bottom to help insulate and kind of give a little bit more cushion for their babies.
Interesting. Yeah. My mom was like the perfect backyard environment for that. So maybe I'll give her a nest box for the winter holidays.
Yes. Can I play that chickadee clip for you really quick?
Please do.
I just want to put us on pause, and then I will pull it up and we can
share
that little alarm call for everyone. Okay. So that's the alarm call that I mentioned earlier. I wanted to make sure we shared it.
Yeah. I did notice that there seemed to be more stress on the D. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't as piercing and smooth of a call. It was more of like a raspy, pay attention.
Yes, exactly. It definitely gives you that vibe. Like, hey, there's something really important here.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what they do. And apparently if whatever the threat is like really scary and really detrimental towards the safety of the flock, they'll insert more D's within their call.
So the longer it goes on,
the more important the emergency is, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. So we got that. Okay.
So
we're in the middle of December.
Yeah. They're our winter soldiers.
They're our winter soldiers.
They really, I don't want to say they thrive in this environment, but they're probably one of the most adapted, if not animals, definitely birds.
Yeah. They have some really special, adaptations, I guess is the way to say it. Adaptations to living in this area compared to other species. They have a really unique ability to control their metabolism. And what this does is it helps them withstand the cold temperatures that they do, or that they experience. And they go into almost a state of dormancy every night. So it's like,
okay,
when they go to bed, it changes. When they wake up, it changes, which I would think would be very stressful on a body. But they do this in order to conserve energy.
Right.
And they pretty much cut their body temperature in half. So they're sitting right around at 107 degrees Fahrenheit. They can go down as low as 50 to 54 degrees.
Okay.
And, of course, you know, overall metabolic rate goes down. This way they can just kind of save what fat reserves they have. They're not shivering. They're not putting themselves in a situation that can make them vulnerable to the elements or other predators.
Right.
They're also really known for storing food.
Yes.
Yes. So we have a few bird species that do that. We also have some mammals that do that. Chickadees are one of them. They can, some studies are saying they can remember where they've stored food for up to 28 days.
Okay.
And they will store them in hundreds of different places at a time.
Wow.
And they start doing this earlier in the fall just to prepare for winter, and they'll go back. So they've got these resources to feed off of when it's cold. I think it's pretty genius, honestly.
I think in a way it's almost more advanced than just collecting food and bringing it into a den that you're hibernating in over the winter.
Yeah.
Because they're doing it in multiple locations and they're able to remember most of those.
Yeah. They just have to hope that no one else comes across it. So, yeah. And in addition to that, they do have a half inch thick layer of feathers. which will help keep them warm in the winter.
Oh, certainly.
So you'll oftentimes see them puffed up or looking a little.
They're a little fluffy thicker in the wintertime. Yeah.
They're pretty cute. They're like little cotton balls, basically. So just
know. And I would assume this cavity nesting and roosting is an adapted behavior for the wintertime as well.
Yeah.
So oh, that's yeah. why it's important. Like, even if that tree fell during a massive storm, let that tree stay there.
Yeah. And
if it's leaning against another tree, all the better, because that means a predator is not going to sneak up on this chickadee mm-hmm. while it's sleeping.
Right. And in the same vein, if for some reason they lose that shelter, they do have other methods that help them survive in the winter.
Okay.
So, you know,
yeah.
Yes, the shelter's gone. They might be temporarily homeless if they can't use that cavity anymore. But they've got the insulating feathers. They have the ability to go into a state of torpor overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And they have food cached in multiple places to use.
So and, that's why there's – I mean, they're so adaptable.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, we do take down those trees and we do yeah. change their habitat readily.
Yes.
But they're able to accommodate and move on.
Yeah. They've developed some amazing ways to help deal with harsh winter conditions. So I think it helps them. I think it helps keep them afloat around here, honestly. And it's amazing. It's too bad all birds can't do that.
I know. And I love hearing them in the summertime.
Yeah, yeah.
Spring.
So maybe next time you see one in your backyard, just know they're just a little extra special because of all that they can do, especially in winter.
Yeah, and keep an eye on out
yeah.
for them this winter. You'll probably see.
Mm-hmm. I see them a lot of times, as you mentioned earlier, on my suet feeder. I've had sock, like the finch feeders in my backyard, and they do really well with those.
Okay.
So anybody that's a winter bird feeder, you're probably going to see at least a few of these, and they're going to come after whatever you provide, so feel free.
Yep.
Yeah. I should say who I got my info from today.
Please do.
Yes.
I know we mentioned Cornell a few times.
Oh, as always. Always get info from them. University of Washington provided the information regarding the I got some good info from them, I swear. Oh, they talked about the chickadee alarm sound.
Okay.
So thanks to them for that. North American Bird Breeding Survey, the International Union for Conservation of Nature, that's the red list that we talk about sometimes.
Yep.
And Current Biology provided that report on the hybrid zone between black-capped chickadees and Carolina chickadees.
Cool.
Yeah.
You so, uncovered a lot of very interesting scientific journals.
I had some success with this one this time. So pretty proud of myself.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah. I guess where you can find us.
Yep. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Cuckoo Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Gmail account. Yes. HelloCuckooPodcast@gmail.com.
Yes.
We recorded today on Anchor FM.
Yes.
And we appreciate all our listeners.
Yeah.
So reach out to us on any of those platforms. Share your winter wildlife behavior. We would love to hear about it. It's definitely a slow season, so anything that you find is definitely noteworthy.
Yes.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
Take care.